now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, today is Wednesday, September 13th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Guys, we got a packed show tonight. People, please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. We got a lot going on right now in sports. It's a packed show. We're going to talk a little college football, some tennis. We got some baseball. We're going to give you some college picks for week three, some week two NFL picks. We may even throw in a win-loss game with the Jets and Giants schedule if we have time. But the week one of the NFL season is over. I can't believe it already, guys. It was a rough week for the local teams. Giants got steamrolled in Dallas. We're going to come to that in a minute. And although the Jets got the W, it was a costly win. It was a four-snap Aaron Rodgers performance before a season-ending torn Achilles injury. The Jets wind up winning 22-16. Josh Allen was a wreck in the game. The Jets had him looking everywhere, all over the place. The Jets' defense is going to be something to reckon with this year. You could tell Hall looked great. 10 for 127, 83-yard run he had. Let's start with Kev. Kev, talk to me.
Did that really happen Monday night?
It really happened, wow. Buddy.
I mean, sitting at home, and I talked to a couple of people that were actually at the game Monday night, last night, and I think it came through on the TV. They were there. They said pregame that place was louder than they've ever heard it. And these are guys that go. They have season tickets. You know, they're there every week, no matter what. At home, you could feel it. Pregame, it's 9/11. You've got all this. Extra stuff going on because of 9/11. And here comes, you know, the Jets lined up. Aaron Rodgers coming through with the flag, through the players' tunnel, basically. And I am so psyched. I'm as psyched maybe as I've ever been for a Jets season coming up. Jets come out, a couple plays, you know, force a punt, and four plays later.
Boom.
Boom. And Aaron Rodgers is sitting there on the turf, and you just think, oh, this doesn't look good.
Yeah, you kind of could tell by the look on his face, right, Kev?
Yeah. And it was just such a gut punch. And Darren and I are the diehard Jet fans, and not since the 98 season.
99 season.
Right. Yeah, the year after 98, when we lost the AFC Championship game to Denver, and we were the best team in the league that year. And going into 99, you felt like this was a Super Bowl team. You go back, the last decade's been bad. Even when they went to back-to-back AFC Championship games with Sanchez, you never felt confident going into the season like this is a Super Bowl team. Along the way, we've had some teams that we thought were playoff possible, but never like this, where you say, we are legitimately a Super Bowl contender. And to have it come crashing down has got to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, gut punch I can remember as a Jet fan. Darren, your thoughts?
It was rough. I mean, listen, you know, you're sitting there, you're hoping it was nothing, even though you're thinking that there's a chance at the Achilles when they're talking about an ankle, and it just hurt. You know, we didn't get to see Rodgers much at all as a Jet yet. He vowed today he'd be back, by the way, which is always nice to hear. It deflated everybody. I mean, listen, the whole team is built around in my Jet lifetime. Okay, I never watched Namath. The Jets have never had their best player be the quarterback. Now, I'm not saying he's the player he was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever, but he's still the biggest star on this team is the quarterback, which we have not experienced. Even that 99 team when Vinny got hurt, He had a great year in 98, but he was an up and down quarterback his entire career. Last time he was the top guy was when he came out of Miami. Kev?
And offense, we knew we had Curtis Martin, Hall of Fame running back. We knew we had Keyshawn and Corbett. So Vinny was not the main focus on that team, unlike what Rodgers was this year.
I mean, and the Jets have probably as good a skill game as we've had since They gave Sanchez, you know, Santonio Holmes when he was not a head case. Curtis and who was the streak wide receiver out of Michigan, Braylon Edwards. This is probably even a little bit more complete because Garrett Wilson is a star. I mean, the play he made that Monday night was ridiculous. There's a play that most receivers can't make. I'm talking about even the elite receivers can't make. So, I mean, so we had skilled positions. We had a quarterback that can get it out there. We had him go for the three-step drop, doesn't release it. For some reason, I thought Brown got beat, but then you watch it again. It was a three-step. He was just trying to cut him, give him an extra few seconds. He didn't like what he saw, turned on that turf, got his cleat caught, basically. And that's that. And, you know, the NFL came out and defended turf today. But, you know, you got to imagine grass would be a little bit better for these guys. We went into the season with high hopes. All three of us picked the Jets to make the playoffs. When was the last time that happened? Even when they made back-to-back championships, me and Kevin might have blindly picked it. Gino would be like, yeah, whatever. Maybe. You know, maybe you get the sixth spot. And even one of the years we did make the final, we did get just that last spot. Remember, Colts laid down last week of the season so we could get in so they could beat us a couple of weeks later. But, I mean, it's one of those scenarios. You feel like the team is still good. You feel like you got to see Zach grow now. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, G.
So a couple of things. One, it's a week one win, first off, which is
against the defending champs of the division.
Okay. And I heard a lot of people talking about how bad Josh Allen was. I don't care how bad he was. It's a win. And that's all that matters right now in the NFL is getting the W on the board. The other thing, again, it's a silver lining on the side of this because nobody cares about it in the long run. But obviously Rodgers won't play 65% of the snaps. So it's a second round pick that's going to go to Green Bay, not a first round pick.
Now, the hope as a Jet fan is that you are good enough so it's not early second round. That's still at least the middle of the round.
Correct.
Listen, I still expect this team to make the playoffs, so I'm not backing away from my original prediction.
All right, so I don't know at this moment if we were redoing those picks, if I would have them in. We saw a lot of what Zach Wilson could give you last year. Hopefully he's grown a little bit from that. We'll see. Obviously, this is a better team than last year, so we'll see from that angle. They're going to have to bring another quarterback in. I'm not saying he's a starter, but they're going to have to bring somebody else in. It's going to be a veteran, okay? A lot of names have been thrown around in 2 days. I think because of the money, it's not going to be Kyler Murray, or it's not going to be Matthew Stafford. I just think the money's too big. I don't know how anybody would get it in. But here are some names. I'll throw some names out that were thrown around. I wrote them down. Andy Dalton, Kyle Trask, Cooper Rush, Colt McCoy, Jameis Winston, Nick Foles, Garner Minshew, Davis Mills, Cody Brissett. That seems to be the list of names at the moment that's out there.
I hear Matt Ryan as well.
I didn't want to go to Matt Ryan only because he basically has said he's out, and the last time he was here, he really wasn't all that good. But do any of those names interest you two Jet fans?
They're gonna have to pick up one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to have a backup to Zach at this point. If anybody was out there. If anybody good was out there, they'd be on a roster already. Let's be honest. Agreed. They'd be starting.
So some of these guys are on rosters. They're just not.
Oh yeah.
Well, they're just not starters.
Everybody I named, but Colt McCoy, Nick Foles, and Matt Ryan are on. Everybody else is on a roster.
Wentz is not. Winston and Wentz are free also, aren't they?
Yeah, I didn't bring those guys up, but yeah.
Jameis Winston and Carson Wentz to me seem like the two most logical guys. Not that I really like either one. They're both mistake prone, but they can manage a game and they can get you through a situation. I'm fine with Zach being my guy right now. I really am. I hope that listen, the most important guy at in the Jet organization is Hackett. Hackett's got to develop Listen, he got Blake Bortles to the AFC Championship game. Okay, let's just remember who we're talking about. We're talking about a guy that Rodgers loved. He did great things with Bortles. He didn't have a great year with Wilson last year, admittedly. But I don't know if that's Wilson's fault. I don't know if that's his fault. The fact is that we need this guy to build Zach Wilson up, and he's got to get put Zach in positions to be good. Kev?
But, Darren, how many great coordinators have we seen be terrible head coaches? It happens all the time. We know
Norv Turner is probably the most famous one that you'll find. Charlie Weiss did not do a good job when he head coached, and he was an amazing offensive coordinator.
But I want to know names. So from both of you, who are your top two off all these guys we just named?
You want to go first or you want me to, Kev?
I would go probably Brissett first. Only because I know he's been at least a decent quarterback for a short term in case we need it. And probably for the experience, maybe a Colt McCoy. I mean, for being realistic, you're not going to bring in a guy who's going to be able to come in and necessarily outplay Zach if Zach is playing decently. You know, what we want is Zach to play decent.
Darren?
I go Wentz and McCoy.
You go Wentz and McCoy, okay.
And the only reason why I go Wentz is because I think with the talent around him, he might be. Listen, the Jet offense has to change a little bit right now. They have to use Zach's legs. They have to use a little bit more rollout. They have to do a couple of things a little bit differently to use his skill set. All right? You got to hope that Hackett can get through to him. You got to hope that Rodgers still stays part of this organization like he claims he is to help this get along. And you hope they help him see the field better. He threw a bad pick to Milano. But overall, he did not play awful. I just think that the Jets didn't also give him a chance to throw the ball downfield. I think he was throwing screens and checkdowns all night, and they won't win if they're going to do that. He has to throw the ball down the field. Kev?
But last year, he also struggled on these short little gimmies, and at least, you know, even with a bad interception, even with throwing short balls, he completed two-thirds of his passes, which is far more than he's ever done.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I was picking two guys off that list that we just named, I think I would say Nick Foles or Garner Minshew. I think those.
I have no problem with Minshew either. I never thought Foles was that good. He has the greatest percentage of quarterback rating of all time in a Super Bowl. He had the 7 touchdowns in a game. I just think I don't want a statue back there. I need someone that can move, and I don't love him for that. But I like Minshew. I like the statue.
I wouldn't mind the mustache. Yep.
I mean, I would. My fear with you two is. You get to go through a two game stretch at some point, and Zach is horrible, and you have to turn to somebody again. Maybe it's only a game, but you may have to turn to somebody. You're gonna just turn the ball over to Colt McCoy. I can't see. If you told me it was Foles, if you told me it was Minshew, Brissett, I think that's an option. Wentz, I think, is an option, but. Some of these guys, I just can't see you having to turn the ball over to that guy to run your team for a game or two, just even if it's to get Zach Wilson's head on straight, you know. So,
well, these first 6 games are brutal, right? They win against Buffalo. Now you go to Dallas, whose defense looked lights out last week. So, and we'll get more to that as we go. But yeah, the Jets are up against a brutal schedule.
We look at that. Before the season started, and the first 6 going into the bye week, you had Buffalo, which I thought was a toss-up with Rodgers, and we got the win there. You figure at Dallas, home for Philly, home for Kansas City, those are 3 brutal matchups early on. You were at New England or home for New England?
No, home for New England at Denver, the other 2. Yep.
As Jet fans, you know, to me, going into that stretch, even with Rodgers at quarterback, I would have been fine with 3-3.
I'm still fine with 3-3.
You were hoping for 4-2 with Rodgers, but you know 3-3 still sets you up where the last 11 games were not nearly the strength that these first 6 were. With Zach back there, you've got to get either at this point, New England or Denver have to be a win still.
If you get I think there, both have to be wins. I got to be honest with you. And I don't think this game is a loss this week either.
Yeah, you can't fall too far behind. I mean, if they're 2-4, but if Zach is looking like a NFL quarterback, you still think there's hope. If they're sitting here 1-5, then you know obviously all bets are off.
Well, they lose 5 in a row. I mean, it's lights out. And yeah, there's not an easy team in that bunch. The easiest team is Denver, and that's a road game.
Okay, So here's the next question I'll pose to both of you, because you just basically said it. What happens if you go 1-5 through 6? You're 1-5 going into game 7. Is there any change in the philosophy here?
Why are you 1-5?
If it's the quarterback, then we have an issue.
If it's quarterback, then you have to change it. If it's not necessarily just the quarterback, if the whole team just sort of falls flat, then you probably still have to stick with Zach, I think. This is now his make or break year for the Jets.
His whole career after this, because if Rodgers does come back next year, I mean, and he's not signed, the Jets may not. If Zach plays like, if he becomes Brock Purdy and everything goes well, you know, it doesn't matter what Rodgers wants. But if he, you don't expect him to be Brock Purdy because we've seen him already. But if he could be just adequate or something like that, the Jets might be able to get a pick for him. There might be something special. He might be somebody's future. This is his chance. This is his opportunity. Kid certainly has skills. He wasn't likable in some ways with a little bit of brashness, but he also just needs to be a little bit more consistent. He's got to be able to make the throws, step into them properly.
Okay. The three of us have not talked about this beforehand. I think you guys have taken this way too lightly, considering how much you guys couldn't stand Zach Wilson most of last year.
I never said I couldn't stand Zach Wilson. I was not as anti-Zach Wilson as a lot of other people.
You guys couldn't
stand him. I did not blame him for a lot of the losses on this team. I did not. Okay. I did not. All right. And I still don't. He was hurt the first 4 games. I thought that Flacco was got a miracle break against Cleveland. I thought Zach, he wasn't good, but I didn't blame him for the team struggling. I blamed the defense in a lot of situations last year, too.
If you remember, the Jets started off the season, they were in decent shape, and they finished, 5 or 6 losses in a row?
Yep.
All of it turned when they lost Breece Hall and Elijah Vera Tucker in that Denver game.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the season turned last year. And you saw Breece Hall, just a little flash of what he can do, the breakaway ability of him. What the Jets need to do, what Hackett needs to worry about now is with Zach. Let's not go ultra-conservative, please. We need to rely on Cook and Hall to shoulder a lot of the load in the offense. But let's get some play action concept in here, please. You got to be loading up the box a little bit, knowing that Zach, you've got two weapons at running back. Let's use some play action early. Try to free up somebody.
And let's use two tight ends too. Let's use two tight ends here and there and get them out for shorter or intermediate passes. We have guys that can catch the ball at that tight end position.
And let's get Mecole Hardman in space. You know, with this speed, let's get the ball to Garrett.
This is just me. I don't think you're winning at Dallas. So I think you're 1-1. And I think the New England game in game 3 really is a game where if the Jets losing are 1-2 at that point, that there's going to be, especially if Zach is a little off, there's going to be talk that you're going to have somebody else in here by game 4.
Well, the fan base hates Zach.
I know.
The fan base does. The fact of the matter is this. Zach Wilson played the entire game on Monday, and they beat Buffalo. Did he play great? No. Did he play awful? No. He was okay. They didn't take the – he had a bad pass, one bad pass. I need him to scramble a little bit more and run. He was under a little bit of pressure. Buffalo's defense is very good. Wasn't like they were going up against a defense that was mediocre at best. It's a top 10 defense in this league. And he took zero first team reps, probably for the last 2 weeks. So now you throw this kid in. He played the entire game. They were down 13-3. He led them back. Whether you like the way he led them back or not, Be that as it may, it doesn't matter. He did.
He rallied them.
Two of the three interceptions by Josh Allen were Hail Marys thrown into the end zone where we didn't advance it. We didn't get the ball in great position. One of them was a great play by Whitehead. The other two were, you know, thrown to him. You know, but we gave them points on Zach's pick as well. So those two scores kind of, you know, even each other out. You know, I think that the kid is capable of doing it. He's got the skill set. After season one, I thought that he had a chance of having a future. And then, you know, season two, he started off hurt. And, you know, his knee buckled in the preseason. He didn't get to play till week four or five or whatever it was. And he was not good. But at the same time, you know, I saw flashes in season one where I'm hoping that him working with Hackett and him working with Rodgers makes him a little bit stronger.
Okay. Any other final Jet points right now before we move to the...
Kev's got a couple and I have. You go first, Kev.
I've got two. Number one, at least for winning the game, one of the best stories from Hard Knocks was Xavier Gibson. And for him to get that walk-off punt return for the touchdown was just a special moment for that kid. And I want to hear about, you know, all the Jet player tripped him. How many damn calls were missed? I mean, Zach Wilson gets smacked upside the head and there's no rubber pass. So I don't want to hear a missed call. The Jets have always gotten screwed by a referee, so I don't want to hear that.
All right, enough of the sob story.
There's no sob story.
Oh, yes, it is. Enough.
No, it's not. And number two, just the funniest thing was, you know, you mentioned Whitehead. He had an escalator clause in his contract. If he had three interceptions this year, he got a $250,000 raise. Well, he rushed out game one. Darren, you had a couple points?
Yeah, just a couple things. The Jet defense. Now here's my criticism on the defense. That last drive can't happen. I'm sorry. You got the 3-point lead. That drive can't happen. You get a lucky call on an offensive interference play because you don't know if that's going to be called every time. And that stopped them. They could have scored a touchdown on that drive. This defense, if it's going to be the defense that carries this team, it can't be the defense that gave up the fourth down play to Detroit last year. Can't be the defense that came out against Seattle and let them run it down our throat last year with Mike White playing with a broken spleen and everything else going on. It's got to be better than that. You have to find a way to get to the quarterback on that last drive. They did not. If they're going to play like this down the stretch of games, the Jets aren't going anywhere. They're not making the playoffs, and it wouldn't be Zach Wilson's fault. They have to be able to hold on to the lead. I think Carl Lawson's the best pure pass rusher on that team. He gets the most pressures. Year in, year out, when healthy, his injury hurts a little bit, but there's enough depth on that team where someone's got to get home. And it disappointed me to watch that. And the Josh Allen, Diggs, and McDermott thing, a little interesting. There was a lot of they were giving him a hard time, it looked like, on the bench in Buffalo. Diggs was not happy with the way Allen was playing. And I told you this when we in the NFL prediction. I think that there could be something there. So just let's watch for it because Diggs is the kind of guy, and he played great, by the way. Reed or Gardner couldn't cover him really. He was very good all day. They won. They go to Dallas. I know it's a tough game, but against the Jet defense, if the Jet defense plays right, Prescott is prone to make mistakes. So I'm not counting this game as an out yet either. G.
Okay. Speaking of Dallas, we'll move to the other New York football team. Dallas utterly destroyed the Giants 40-0. In the first quarter, there was a blocked field goal for a touchdown, an interception for a touchdown, a field goal. They had another field goal, another touch. It was 26-0 at the half. Dallas winds up with 7 sacks and 2 interceptions in the game. The way this looked, it could have gotten to 60-0 at one point if everything was just going right. Giants got to turn this around now. Darren, start this one off.
Well, never a game. Jones did not look good at all. Nothing seemed to work. 7 sacks, just a bad night. You look at the Giants' last two games, they've been outscored 78-7. I'm, you know, 40-0 and 38-7 against Philly. And, you know, the fan base is, oh, Dable's the next coming to Christ, you know, and you're hearing about all this. And listen, I'm not saying he's going to be a bad coach. They won a lot of very close games last year. When they played against good teams, they did not win, except for the one game in Minnesota in the playoffs that kind of stood out. You know, they beat, you know, they beat Aaron Rodgers just like the Jets did. You know, so that was probably their other big win at the time because no one knew that Green Bay was going to have a tough season. Daniel Jones, and I'm just going to put this out there for the Zach Wilson folks that hate Zach Wilson. Last year, Giant fans hated Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones sucks. You can't sign him. He's gone. Who's going to be our next quarterback? And all of a sudden, all 15 touchdown passes, nothing special, but a lot of running and a lot of winning, Daniel Jones became someone that had to get a huge contract this year. Now, if you're going to tell me that his first couple of years is any different than Zach Wilson's first couple of years and how the Jet fans felt about him, you're crazy. If you're going to tell me Daniel Jones is that much more, I don't know, talented than Zach Wilson, I think you're nuts. Daniel Jones, again, he had a good year. He threw for 15 touchdown passes. He didn't turn the ball over a lot. He didn't fumble every time he was sacked. A lot of things went well. But the Giants have not beaten a good team in multiple years, and Dable's going to have to prove something, and they're going to have to do it. I mean, listen, they play Arizona this week, so they almost get like a gimme this week, right? But they're going to have to start beating some decent teams to make the playoffs because their schedule gets a lot harder this year. To me, the Cowboys didn't do anything, and they won 40-0. Kev?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said there. You know, unfortunately for a Sunday night game, the game is over by, you know, 9 o'clock. That being said, I'm not going to overreact totally to week one. I mean, way too many people are now anointing Dallas as, you know, Super Bowl favorites and the Giants are the worst team in the league and everything else. That's an overreaction for week one. I still say, you know, the Giants were a good team last year. They had the addition of Waller. You felt like they still had some of the talent coming back, and you know, you saw Jones make at least progression last year from what he was, that you still feel like, I still feel like the Giants can be a good team.
Me too.
And I think they can still be a playoff team. Dallas, and again, you know, once, you know, you get the block kick for the touchdown, like you said, the interception I think was on a deflection even. You know, every break went Dallas's way too. They're not going to get every break like they did that night either. So, you know, let's see when Dallas plays a team that's, you know, a little more competitive with them from the gun. You know, let's see how Dallas handles it.
Yeah, just one last point. The Giants are not going to have a formula where Jones has to throw as much as he had to do on Sunday and win. So when they fall behind that big, the 7 sacks are really because they had no choice. He's just stepping back, and you know, listen, Micah Parsons probably the best defensive player in the NFL right now. I don't even think it's that close. He's that dominant a player. He can do so many things with his speed and his strength. So it's just one of those scenarios where everything that could have gone wrong did. I picked the Giants to make the playoffs. I still think they're going to make the playoffs.
Jake? So do I. What's important for them this week is go out to Arizona and just get the win.
Yeah, play your game. Run the ball, play your game. You don't have to win the game 30-3. You got to win the game like Washington did. You got to beat this team, you know, by 4 points. You know, it doesn't matter. You just got to win the game on the road.
Don't give up this stuff early. You know, make sure Jones doesn't turn the ball over. Get Barkley going. Get Jones' running game going as well, and just take care of business.
Yeah,
go to 1-1. Wash away the taste from that opening week.
So I think that I think they're still a 9-win team, but like you said, Darren, they're going to have to beat a good team eventually. And last year they had too many really close call wins in the last couple of minutes. And if 2 or 3 of those don't go their way, they're not going to make it to the 9 wins, because right now they can't beat some of these good teams, and they're going to play Dallas twice and Philly twice, which are 2 of probably the 3 or 4 top teams in that conference. Now they're gonna have a lot of other games and they in the conference that they should get wins with, but they also get the AFC East, which is also going to be a gauntlet of teams to go through. Also, so you know, I don't know. I don't want to overreact. They're 0-1. It's one game, but they're going to have to beat some good teams at some point. So,
Jets Giants Week 8 loser leave MetLife game.
That's what it looks like right now, pal.
All right, let's start going around the NFL. Miami beat the Chargers 36-34, 2 of 466 and 3 touchdowns. Hill had two of those, 10 catches, 215 yards. He was dynamic. Darren?
Well, I mean, what the Dolphins did in the last drive was what I wanted the Jets to do to Buffalo. They forced Herbert into a threw it away. He threw, why am I blanking on the rule? But he threw the ball away and got a penalty on it.
Intentional grounding.
I couldn't think of the term. I don't know why. And then they sacked him on the next play. The simple fact of the matter is that Vic Fangio is going to have this team dialed up in certain situations. Their defense wasn't great all day, but it was better than the Chargers. And if the Jets needed to do that against Buffalo, and they didn't, against another good quarterback like Allen.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. That, you know, for all the talk about Fangio and everything else, you know, they did give up 34 to the Chargers.
Oh, they did.
Yep. Philadelphia beat New England 25-20. The New England defense is going to be really good. Philadelphia looked a little rusty. We're going to see how they start playing. Kev?
I thought Sirianni had screwed up, though. They got to the two-minute warning. They had made New England use all but one timeout. They've got fourth and two from the 44. It's fourth and two. It's not fourth and inches. Fourth and a full 2 yards, maybe even closer to three. And he's got them going for it.
Yeah, kick
you've
it.
You've got Mac Jones, the quarterback. Put the ball away. Pin him down at the 10-yard line and make Mac Jones go 90 yards with one timeout and a minute 50 left. Don't give him the short field. And if the guy gets – I forget who the receiver was. If he gets that toe down, you know, all of a sudden, New England's got a first down, and they're going to win that game.
Yeah.
I thought that it was – again, that call was stupid. I agree with you on that because Sirianni, I know you want to sit there and put your foot on their neck and win it with your offense. You hadn't done anything all day. You hadn't done anything really since the first quarter. And Slay's defensive pick six is probably the difference in the entire game because New England settled in, and their defense is for real. They're a great defensive team, and it's going to be they're going to be competitive in every game they're in, basically.
Okay, last Thursday night's game, Detroit wound up beating Kansas City 21-20. No Kelsey. Mahomes couldn't get a wide receiver to actually catch anything he threw him. Kev, at one point, I thought he could have been throwing the ball to you and me because those receivers looked like you and me out there. Mahomes was 21 of 39. That's 18 incompletions, and probably about 9 or 10 of them would just drop the balls. It was ridiculous. Darren?
Okay, here's the thing. Strange game. First and foremost, Jawan Taylor lines up offside basically on every single play. The chief right tackle was never on the line. I don't know how you don't call it. You call it early, you fix it. They let him sit there all day. Stupid thing. Mahomes was basically on his own all night. The pick six, I've never seen the pick six, a better thrown pick six in my life. It hit Tony in the hands in stride. He didn't do anything wrong. He was by himself. I didn't think he got much help. I thought Detroit did not play smart. They came down early, ran the ball. Then they stopped doing it. I didn't understand what their plan was. Kadarius Toney dropped everything that they threw to him. He dropped every single ball. Every single ball. That's hard to do as an NFL receiver. And Sky Moore was only a little bit better than that, not much. Best receiver was Rice, who no one had ever seen before because he came out of college, rookie pick. The two players, the thing with the Chiefs is that they have two players, one on each side of the ball, that demand a double team, and everybody's paying attention to what they do, and neither one played. So when you don't have Kelsey, the entire defense is focused on where is Kelsey. We're going to chip him. We have one guy on him. We have two guys on him. We have the safety over the top. So now when he's out of the game, I can play. I don't have to worry about anybody. There's nobody special on that offense that you're worried about. On the other side, Chris Jones is the same guy. I don't have to double team any of their defensive tackles now. So now I can put that extra guy shifted over to the end, and I can block all their tackles man-to-man. Now, Mike Dana didn't play bad. He was okay. But at the same time, you know, you didn't have that push. So I thought that the Chiefs Detroit was the better team. They won the game. They deserved to win the game, in my opinion. But I think that the Chiefs with Jones back, and if Kelsey gets healthy, I think that the team will be just fine.
Okay. All right, going around the NFL, Washington beat Arizona 20-16. Second half defense by Washington was really good. Montez Sweat and Jonathan Allen are going to be good players. The O-line gave up 6 sacks. Washington almost lost this game but came back and took it. Atlanta beat Carolina 24-10. In this game, safety Jesse Bates had 10 tackles, 2 interceptions, and a forced fumble. Tyler Algier scored twice. Bijan Robinson had 10 carries for 56 yards, but Algier had 15 for 75 with 2. Cleveland beat Cincinnati 24-3. Cincinnati was held to only 142 yards. Miles Garrett looked pretty explosive. Darren?
Joe Burrow does not win in Cleveland. He's 1-4. I think the injury to start the season, plus the fact that he played in Cleveland, where he never really wins, I think people are getting a little too excited about how bad Cincinnati is. They're not. They will miss Jesse Bates, by the way, though. He is an all-pro safety, and letting him go to Atlanta, you saw what he did in week one. Kev?
Don't overreact to week one, please. This exactly. is still a good team.
All right. Baltimore beat Houston 25-9. Dobbins out for the year with an ACL. Zay Flowers looks like he could be a player. We're going to see how well he comes on. Jacksonville beat Indiana 31-21. Calvin Ridley looks like the number one receiver we didn't see for like 3 years now. He looks like he's back. Time will tell, but it looks like he's going to be good. And Trevor Lawrence throwing the ball is a great duo. Kev?
And Trevor Lawrence actually winning in Indy. Jacksonville has had terrible luck in Indy, much like Joe Burrow in Cleveland, where you don't expect it. So, you know, Trevor Lawrence gets that off his back.
In the don't overreact to a week one loss, San Francisco destroyed Pittsburgh 30-7. McCaffrey was 22 for 152 with a touchdown. Listen, I know you guys were okay with Pittsburgh. You both thought they would be pretty good. I honestly don't think they're that good of a team, but we're going to see. They have some good defensive players. Any comments on that game, guys?
So San Fran, even before the season, you know, this is not an overreaction to week one. We thought going in that San Fran, at least Darren and I had him in the Super Bowl.
So did Gino.
Absolutely.
He has Buffalo. I have Cincinnati, and you have San Francisco winning it. So, yeah.
Yep. So, you know, we're not surprised by what San Fran did.
Okay. Most complete team in the NFC and maybe in the league.
Tampa Bay beat Minnesota 20-17. Cousins had 2 fumbles and an interception. Jefferson, 9 for 150. Baker Mayfield was good. A late field goal and Tampa wins the game. New Orleans beats Tennessee 16-15. Tannehill threw 3 interceptions. Kev, any comments?
Don't you learn from what happened to Rodgers in the playoffs game? You've got 3rd and 12 at the 17 with just over 2 minutes left. You complete a 6-yard pass to make it 4th and 6. You're down 16-12. Why are you kicking the field goal there with a chance of not getting the ball back at all? You're down the shadow of the goal line. You go for it. If you get stuffed, fine. Then now your defense has got to play against them in the shadow of their own end zone there. And, yep. You know, send your defense out there. Make them force a play. Get them the short field. I thought Vrabel, for one of the rare times, Vrabel is usually an excellent coach. I thought he screwed up that decision.
I completely agree with you that I had that highlighted on my sheet. It just sometimes we see some of these plays that these coaches call and we're like, come on, did you know you weren't going to be able to get the ball back? I mean, come on, it just looks like a really bad call. That's all.
5 minutes left, fine. You know, or if it's 4th and 12, okay, you know, what are the chances of making 4th and 12? Okay, maybe I kick the field goal. I've got a better chance of kicking the field goal and getting the ball back rather than making a 4th and 12. That's like the Chiefs. So, I mean, what the hell were they doing going for 4th and 20?
Yeah, it was stupid.
Or 4th and 25. Yeah.
That was just dumb.
All right. In other games, the Rams beat Seattle 30-13. Stafford had 2 new targets out there, Puka Nacua and Tutu Atwell. Both had really good games. Surprisingly, it wasn't Cam Akers that ran the ball. It was Kyrian Williams who had a lot of the carries in that game. Seattle, you guys both called it that you didn't think Geno Smith was going to come back a second straight year. We're going to see what he does. Green Bay beat Chicago 38-20. Jordan Love, 3 touchdowns, 245 yards. Aaron Jones, 127 yards and 2 touchdowns. Darren, that's a great fantasy football pick, by the way.
I have him in both leagues, buddy.
I know you do. And Las Vegas winds up beating Denver 17-16. Adams and Myers were really good out there. As we always, as we've been saying for a while, Jimmy G just keeps on winning. Darren, what do you got?
People don't realize that the Raiders have beaten the Broncos 7 in a row now. They just kind of own them. It's not a series you hear about because these are two – it's not like one of these teams has been really good and the other one really bad. These are two teams fighting for the bottom of the division because the Chiefs have dominated it. And the Raiders have really kind of kicked their butt. Lutz missed an extra point. Lutz missed a field goal. That's probably the difference, but not probably. That is the difference. The field goal was 55, so you don't crucify him for that. Can't miss that extra point, though. You know, listen, Garoppolo finds a way to win games. He just keeps doing it.
Okay. That's it for the NFL from week one. We're going to go to some college football. Darren, you want to take it over for a couple minutes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically early in the season, you don't get a lot of great games. And this week coming up is probably the weakest week that Kev or I have ever seen. I mean, there are really nothing. There's no special game this week. Last week, you know, Georgia, Penn State, Ohio State, Clemson, Michigan, Tennessee, Washington, Duke, LSU, Florida State, Oregon State, USC were not threatened. These are ranked teams that just blew everybody out. Ranked teams that won with a little bit of a game. Colorado did beat Nebraska. I know Kev caught a little bit of that. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, after a slop, you know, Nebraska never felt like they were in it. You know, it was scoreless into the second quarter, about halfway into the second quarter. But Nebraska just felt like they were overmatched. Shador Sanders is fun to watch. And Colorado has a very sleeper Heisman Trophy candidate. There was a kid coming out of high school, Travis Hunter. He was actually a very highly recruited guy. Defensive player who wanted to play wide receiver. One of the few teams that would let him do it was Jackson State, who, of course, has Deion Sanders as a coach. Deion went to Colorado. He brought Hunter with him. He's now playing both ways, putting up good numbers on the offense and playing about 90% of the snaps both games. We'll see if he can keep this up, but if he does, you know, he'll get the notoriety for doing that. He'll be one of the few non-QBs to be in contention for the Heisman.
Something to look for.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, Gordy Lockbaum, last guy, Holy Cross, that we talked about a little bit.
I think so.
not exactly a household name. I don't know where I came up with it, but there you go. Notre Dame pulled away from NC State. That game was close going into the fourth. Hartman kind of let him down a couple of drives and pulled away. K-State was in a tussle early with Troy and then pulled away from in their game as well. Ranked close games. Utah went into Baylor and beat them by 7. They were down part of the way. Iowa versus Iowa State. Iowa wasn't ranked last week. They are this week. But it was it's the Cyhawk Classic. They're playing their in-state rival. So they found a way to win in Ames. North Carolina, after an impressive opening week against South Carolina, took OT to beat App State at home.
But App State always comes up with these performances, it feels like.
They beat Michigan a couple of years ago.
They had a couple of barn burners last year, too.
No, they were excellent.
I forget who they beat last year, and they took another one to 70-68 or something.
Yeah, exactly. App State's is a great program. It really is.
Yep.
And again, it's still a game you expect North Carolina to win, especially after they manhandled South Carolina. You didn't expect that. Oklahoma pulled away from SMU 28-11. And in a good game, Oregon held off Texas Tech 38-30. Texas Tech was a sleeper for a lot of people in that Big 12. They're 0-2 now after the loss to Wyoming as well. Then we had, you know, the three upsets, okay? The three big game upsets. Kev, Miami, Texas A&M, 48-33. Thoughts?
Didn't see that one coming, obviously. I took Texas A&M. I didn't think Miami – obviously, you know, if you listen to our preview last week, I mentioned Van Dyke, the quarterback for Miami, and he put up a good – he played real well against Texas A&M, obviously.
5 TDs.
Yeah.
No interceptions, 5 touchdowns. Not a bad game. Texas – well, first the other one. Washington State beats Wisconsin at home 31-22. Jumped on, and Wisconsin made a little run. Washington State pulled away. Now Washington State is ranked. Thing about Washington State is that they actually swept Wisconsin in this home and home series. You didn't expect that when it started. They won in Camp Randall last year and they win at home this year. And then the big one, Texas, Alabama, Texas 34, Alabama 24. It was really a big, fourth quarter because Alabama went into the fourth up three. You know, the Texas defense held the Bama running game in check all game. Quentin Ewers threw for 349 and three scores. The turnovers were the difference. Milroe had two picks. Ewers held on to the ball. Texas found a way to win the game. They outgained them. They were the better team statistically throughout the game. I thought the game would be close. I thought Alabama would probably squeak out and win because it was in Tuscaloosa. You and I both were on that.
We both thought the same thing.
Yeah, and G was laying the wood last week. But that's one you didn't expect. That's one I didn't expect anyway. You don't expect Alabama to lose a home game. Thoughts on that, boys? Any thoughts on that one?
Unfortunately, I missed most of the game because ESPN wasn't on my TV yet.
There you go. A couple quick points. Iowa, UCLA, Washington State, and Miami are all now ranked. They were not ranked last week. This week, not a lot of big games. Just going to run through them real quick. First one I mentioned is two non-ranked teams, but because it's the backyard brawl, and I love these rivalries, and now that they're, not now they are, but they're so close proximity, the backyard brawl, Pittsburgh, West Virginia. You have three ranked teams going on the road, well, actually four, where the spreads are inside of like 10, three of them inside 10 and one inside 20. K-State goes to Missouri. They're laying about 4.5 to 5. Both teams undefeated at this point. LSU visits Mississippi State. LSU is laying about 9.5 in Starkville. That's two undefeated teams. Minnesota heads to North Carolina. Both teams undefeated there as well. UNC is ranked 20th. UNC is about a 7.5-point choice. Washington heads to Michigan State. Michigan State is dealing with some turmoil. Mel Tucker, head coach, suspended. Rumored to be fired because of some alleged accusations, sexual harassment and assault. Kev?
Yeah, this is not making fun of the accusation, but just, when you read, he's accused of sexual harassment against a sexual assault awareness speaker.
It just doesn't make any sense.
If there's one person you do not sexually harass, it's a sexual assault awareness speaker. I mean, come on.
And the funniest thing about that is that he denies all charges. He does, but he's going to get fired.
He claims it's consensual.
And we'll see what happens. But tough news for Mel Tucker. But you have Washington heading into Michigan State. They're laying about 16 points. You don't see Michigan State as a home dog by 16 very often. And then finally, the biggest game of the week to us, only because it's a big rivalry, is Tennessee at Florida, the 11-ranked Tennessee, laying about 6.5 in the swamp. So that's my coverage on the NCAA. I know you had another point you wanted to bring up, Kev.
We just mentioned, with the games this week, the top 25, there are only four games where the spread was under 10 points. I mean, just to get a couple of examples, Georgia's favored by 4 touchdowns over South Carolina, Florida State by 4 TDs over Boston College. Notre Dame's favored by 35 over Central Michigan. I mean, that's the type of line spreads we have this week.
It's a bad week of college football.
Yeah.
And, BC barely held off Holy Cross last week. It's a tough time. It's a tough time in college football. We'll get back to our picks a little later, I assume. But I'm going to pass it off to you, G.
All right. We had the U.S. Open tennis finals last weekend. Coco Gauff and Djokovic wind up winning. Coco Gauff becomes the youngest American since Serena to win. She beats Sabalenka in a 3-set. And Djokovic beats Medvedev for his 24th Grand Slam. Kev?
Yeah, I mean, that second set, 104 minutes alone, that's an hour and 45 minutes for the second set alone, never mind the first and third. Like you said, Djokovic's 24th Grand Slam title ties Margaret Court for the all-time record, and Court can play an asterisk guy for all sorts of reasons. She played before the Open era, that's half of them. She was from Australia, when nobody ever traveled to Australia to play that tournament, so Djokovic to me has a record. He regains the number one ranking. He's at 391 weeks and counting. That's an all-time record. This was his 47th time at least reaching the semifinal of the Grand Slam event also. That's an all-time record. And the oldest winner of the U.S. Open in the Open era. So you have the youngest, you know, the women's side, you have the youngest American since Serena. And on the men's side, you have the old guard still with Djokovic.
And Djokovic, to me, you know, he's got 24, so he's now two ahead of Nadal, whose future is really in doubt. But he was not allowed to play the Australian or the U.S. Open for multiple years because of the whole vaccination issue. Yep. So you can only imagine. He could have already passed Margaret Court. He doesn't look like he's slowing down. Obviously, everybody wants to see Alcaraz play him because that seems to be the new matchup. But Djokovic, he doesn't look like he's old when he's out there playing. Eventually, it's going to start looking like Federer where it's, like, tough and things are going to go. But he looks great. Coco Gauff, you know, really proud of her. She, in no way did I ever think she was the best player in the tournament. So she was winning a match. Sabalenka looked much better all throughout the tournament. You feel bad at the end because they have Sabalenka on camera, like throwing a fit in the back. Let the girl have a moment. Let her have her freaking moment. She's upset. She just lost the Open. She's not happy. You don't have to put her on film, in my opinion.
It's in the locker room. She's not expecting anybody to be recording anything in the locker room. What the hell was that about? Come on, give her a moment to, like you said, breathe and just take out the frustrations.
She had played well the whole tournament. Coco beat her, and I'm glad Coco did. I was rooting for her. I thought Sabalenka was the best player in the tournament, but Coco got the best of her. G?
All right. Kev, you had a couple of NBA points you wanted to bring up?
Yeah. New resting rules are in place to try to combat the issue with players not playing. So they put in the thing that, you know, players need to play 65 or more games to be eligible for postseason awards. Now, the NBA is defining stars as anybody who has made an all-star or all-NBA team the previous 3 years. So the rules are no more than one star player is unavailable for the same game. Star players are eligible for nationally televised and in-season tournament games. You should refrain from long-term shutdown of star players. So last year you had Lillard, you had Beal sitting out the last 10 games. They want to avoid that. You should balance your absences between home and road, preferably for the home, so that when you're on the road and the team only see fans only see you once that you actually play. And they want healthy players who are resting to be visibly present and visible to the fans. I guess so you can boo them for not playing, maybe. I don't know. And so, if you start violating these rules, the owner's going to get fined $1 million, supposedly. I don't know.
Listen, it's a novel approach, but there's no penalty in effect. You know, it's going to be up to the commissioner, and then they'll find the owner. Right. You know, there's really no – there's not a big penalty for this.
$1 million is, you know, chump change for a lot of these owners.
Most of them, yeah.
I would say all of them. How about that?
All of them.
But there are exceptions. So if you're age 35 or over on opening night, you're exempt from these rules. If you've played 34,000 minutes in your career or 1,000 games combined, playoffs, and
so LeBron can do whatever he wants.
So in other words, we have to carve out this exception for LeBron because, you know, we don't want to overstress LeBron.
Listen, I think it's a novel approach. They're trying. It's a novel approach. It's just, you know, with no penalty in effect, there's nothing to stop them, you know, other than the owner paying $1 million when he's paying all these players $400 million, you know.
Yeah.
And notice how they protected the in-season stupid tournament that they're trying to do.
Nobody cares.
Dumbest thing I've ever heard.
We're not soccer. Nobody cares about an in-season tournament.
Unless you're going to end the league and everybody's going to go all over the place. And speaking of, like, soccer and tournaments, the FIBA, U.S. finishes in fourth. Now a bunch of the stars are saying they want to play in the Olympics. All right, good. The fact is Germany found a way to win the tournament. The U.S. played well. They lost by 2 to Germany. They lost in overtime to Canada. Should they have beaten both teams? Probably with the talent they have on the floor, they should have won. But, you know, again, we're not getting all the best U.S. players out there. I didn't watch 1 minute of the game, so I can't speak to anything except for stats. I'd see Anthony Edwards seemed like he had a freaking monster tournament. And, you know, you heard a few things here and there about a few of the other players, particularly the Knicks. in this region, and Mikal Bridges from the Nets. So, but outside of that, you know, they finished fourth.
The only thing I read was that we were undersized against these bigger teams.
Yeah, but they only out-rebounded us by two. They only out-rebounded us by two in both games. It wasn't like they were slammed up on the boards. They weren't crushed.
Which is a surprise because size-wise, the other team, these teams in the finals or that we met later were just so much bigger than.
Oh, and Germany's huge. And yeah. Canada's bigger and Germany's huge.
The other NBA news, almost, you know, that Mel Tucker type of thing here, but probably even more serious. Kevin Porter Jr. was assaulted the other morning, was arrested for assault the other morning in Manhattan. He's accused of assaulting his girlfriend. Her name is Kizre Gondrzik, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. She's actually a WNBA player. She was a first-round pick a couple of years ago for Indiana, I think it was. He's accused of punching her in the face. She's got a cut above the eyes, bruising in the face, accused of choking and strangulation. Well, it came out this morning that she probably has a fractured vertebrae in her neck. So we're talking some serious stuff here. Dude, what the hell are you doing? You can't control yourself? What's wrong with these players? Or anybody who lays their hand on a woman, what is wrong with these people?
Whether it's Trevor Bauer or Kevin Porter Jr. or any of these guys, I mean, who's raising you?
Yeah. Now, what was interesting was her Keith Ray's sister, Calabria, is a former Michigan State player. She was actually faced domestic abuse charges back in 2021, which were dropped for striking or hitting her boyfriend at the time, the late Dwayne Haskins.
Okay.
Remember the quarterback? Well, she sent out an Instagram post, Calabria, at Kevin Porter Jr. If you think, and I'm trying not to read this, you know, I'm trying to read this straight up here. If you think you got in touch with my sister and not get touched, count your effing days. Better hope and pray you'll be able to walk again, let alone dribble. You may have gotten away with this S in the past because your mama ain't beat your ass, but we spank little ass B like you every day. Don't show up to that crib. We gone do it to you, little B.
I feel like I'm watching Airplane. I speak jive.
Like I said, I'm trying to read it straight, you know, without trying to put any inflections in there. But you know, it's like, wow, what a
crazy Instagram situation, post. Man!
Just unbelievable. I mean, wow.
It's just unfortunate. You know, it can't happen. It can never happen where a male strikes a female. Listen, if you're protecting yourself, the person has a weapon. They're attacking you, and you're defending yourself. I get it to a certain extent, but at the same point in time. You know, hold, restrain, get them away from you. You're not beating the crap out of them. You have too big of an advantage.
Kevin Porter Jr., an NBA player, just like Trevor Bauer, you're a Major League Baseball player. You're bigger. You're stronger. There's no need for you to be doing this.
Yep. All right, on to baseball. So wild cards are still open right now. Seattle, Texas, Toronto look like they're all battling for the final spot in the NL. Arizona, Miami, San Francisco, Cincinnati, all within a couple of games trying to get that last couple of wild card spots. Tonight, Atlanta had clinched their sixth consecutive NL East title. Matt Olson hit his 50th home run last week. Spencer Strider's just numbers are ridiculous. He's 16-5. He's got 250 strikeouts in 162 innings. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Any other baseball news, Darren?
Dominguez going down. The whole thing was the Yankees were actually becoming a little bit fun to watch for about 5 freaking minutes. And then the guy you wanted to watch gets hurt. And not just gets hurt. I mean, he could be out for a big part of the year next year. He's not a pitcher. So as soon as he can swing the bat, it becomes a different game. They could even DH him if they had to. But my God, Dominguez was so much fun to watch. And now, once again, making the Yankees that much less watchable going forward. Now, the thing I said last week also, the Yankees have now tied the Red Sox, and they rained out tonight for last place. What a difference 20 years makes, 2004 Yankees, Red Sox, top two, 2003, whatever year you want to do. And now these two teams are both 18 and a half behind the Orioles as we wind down the season. Wow, it's so sad and so pathetic. Kev?
The only thing news that came out that I read today was Max Scherzer. He's done for the season. It's pretty ironic. He has a strained teres major muscle in the shoulder. If that sounds familiar to you, the Mets season started with Verlander out for a month with a strained teres major muscle in his shoulder. What is this guy's now? Three straight years where Scherzer's fallen apart in September?
Yeah. Yep.
Probably just as well that the Mets wound up getting rid of Scherzer, even if they had to pay a boatload of money. At least we got some young prospects back for him. But yeah, another season where Scherzer's just done. And looking ahead at the next 2.5 weeks to wrap up the season, I mean, unfortunately, except for the wild card races and the AL West, where, you know, Houston, Texas, Seattle, two of the three are making it, one as the 2 seed in the AL playoffs, which means they get the first round bye. One of them guaranteed to be a wild card, and the other one will be battling with Toronto. There's three of them.
Mm-hmm.
We know Baltimore's up by, going into tonight, Baltimore's up by 3 over Tampa. They're the top two teams in the league. Assuming Baltimore hangs on, they'll be the one. Tampa's clearly in the playoffs too. Minnesota's up by 7.5 all of a sudden. And now, you know, Atlanta's clinched. Dodgers are just about ready to clinch. Milwaukee's up by 4. You know, Philly looks pretty safe for the wild card. Chicago's got the 2-game lead over Arizona. And like you said, you've got a lot of teams there. So it's really the two wild card races in the AL West. Other than that, there's really nothing to look forward to coming down the stretch here. It's going to, and with the Yankees and Mets out of it too, just not much baseball to get yourself interested in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is football going to turn into baseball? I mean, is Zach Wilson and Daniel Jones continue? If the Giants lose, and just not to go too far from the NFL, but you're looking at teams like Buffalo, the Giants, Minnesota, the Chargers, the Chiefs. These teams were all playoff teams last year that all are staring at a chance of going 0-2. Cincinnati, I mean, you know, none of them can afford the loss this week. The 0-2 teams don't usually find their way back. So these teams have to dig in. Anyway, back to you, G.
All right. So we are on to college football picks. So far through 2 weeks, Darren is 6-0, Gino is 3-3, Kev at 2-4. We are combined 11-7, led by Darren 6-0.
That could fall apart in 2 weeks. Trust me.
We hope to get this turned around a little bit. Kev, we're going to give you the first shot here.
Well, I think we're all going to pick the first game.
Correct. Yep. We're all picking
Tennessee-Florida.
Tennessee-Florida.
Spread is 6.5. I know it's a bit of a rivalry game. They're at Florida, but I think Tennessee is just a far superior team. It's less than a touchdown, so I'm going to take Tennessee on the road to cover.
-6.5.
Jake?
I'm picking Tennessee as well. I think they're a better team than this. They're going to roll. I because it's only 6.5, I could see them definitely winning by 10. So I'm taking Tennessee -6.5.
Well, the Vols are the better team. It's the first real test of the season, though, Virginia, and then they played, I don't even remember, Austin Peay, which close to your heart, Gino. But, yeah, it's a nephew down there. Or is he a niece or your nephew that goes to Austin Peay?
Nope, nephew.
Nephew, I was right. But I think Florida gives them all they can handle in the swamp. And I'm taking the Gators +6.5. I think it's a 3-point game. I think Tennessee escapes. I'm taking the Gators.
So if you know anything, Darren will win that game.
I don't know about that.
All right, Darren, you have the honors. We'll let you keep going. You got two more?
Yep. Duke is laying 19.5 against Northwestern. I never say this in football, but Duke is a much better team than Northwestern. I think they win big. I think they win by 4 scores, so four touchdowns. So I think that Duke is going to be able to cover 19.5. And I'm going to go with a weird one here. I'm taking Michigan State at home +16 against Washington. I just think it's a lot of points to lay. In a tough environment, I think Penix can throw the ball around the yard, and he's a great quarterback. But I think Michigan State's a physical team, And one of two things could happen. Either they're going to come out fired up or they're going to come out flat. I'm banking on the fact that they're going to come out fired up at home in front of the home crowd in a Big Ten Pac-12 rivalry matchup. I'm taking Michigan State. Kev?
Yeah, I was looking at that game too and I had the same thought. Do you go for the which way does it go? It's going to go one or the other. But I stay away from that game. I took team we mentioned before, squeaked by Appalachian State. But I think that was a bit of a strange game there. I think UNC will beat Minnesota. The spread's 8. I have them covering the 8.
7.5.
7.5. Oh, great.
So you win by 8. You get the outright win.
No, get the outright win. Yes. And then the third game I've got is Virginia's just looked so bad the first 2 weeks. They lost to James Madison last week. Maryland's not necessarily a great team, but I think they are much better than Virginia at this point. Maryland's at home. I'm going to lay the 14.5 and take Maryland over Virginia.
Okay, I was going to take North Carolina. You took North Carolina, so I'll switch
take
that. I'm going to switch off that game. So the first game I like is Penn State minus 14.5 against Illinois. I think they're a much better team. I think this is a three-score game. And my last pick is going to be UCLA plus 6 against NC Central. Again, I'm just
that's not the spread, and that there's not even a spread in that game.
No,
UCLA
is a spread.
Is not getting plus 6 against North Carolina Central. There is no freaking way. It's a Division II. There's not even a spread on that game.
Okay, I will take. I'll go back to taking North Carolina minus 7.5.
We all would have had that one. There's no way.
Okay. All right. Those are the picks for week 3 of college football. And we're going to move to the NFL picks. NFL, Darren was 2-1. Kevin was 2-1. Gino 1-2. We are combined 5-4. We got to do better than this, guys.
We've never better than 500 last year, G.
Kev, I'm going to give you the honors.
All right. First game I like. Jordan Love looked really good. I'm not sold on anybody Atlanta has a quarterback. Green Bay is only laying 1. It's in Atlanta, so obviously just a win. Assuming they don't win by at least 1. But I'll take Green Bay at Atlanta. My second
spread is
game,
1.5.
Did it go up to 1.5? Okay.
Got to win by 2, baby.
Second game, Darren and I did not like this team in our previews. We're not sold on Seattle. I like the way Detroit looked. I think they have the weapons. The spread is 5.5. I think they win this game by 10 points easily. I'll take the Lions laying the 5.5 at home against Seattle. And the third game, still not sure. You know, I think part of it was the injury that Burrow was coming back from. Yes, part of it was also playing in Cleveland where he never plays well. But he's going up against a pretty good Baltimore defense. Baltimore is getting 3.5 in Cincinnati. I'm going to take the Ravens plus the 3.5 in Cincinnati. So those are my 3.
Ooh. Okay. Darren, you want to go next?
Sure. My first one, I'm taking Pittsburgh plus 2 against Cleveland. I don't think they're going to start off 0-2 at home. I think Tomlin gets off the snide. He never has a losing record. They start slow sometimes. I think Pittsburgh will be fired up on the Monday night. I think they'll find a way. The other two, I'm going head-to-head against Kevin. I have Seattle plus the 5.5 in Detroit. I think Detroit squeaks by, but Carroll has the Hawks ready for a fight. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a game. I didn't like the way Detroit played the game last week. I thought they should have won that game a little easier. I was a little disappointed in how they stopped utilizing the run. I was surprised. I thought they could have kept doing that all night. And I'm going with Joe Cool, not starting off 0-2. I say they win a competitive game by a touchdown against Baltimore. I think that the Ravens are a good team. The defense is good, but it's not as good as it used to be. And I think that Cincinnati always gets fired up, even when they weren't very good. They always play Baltimore really tough. I'm going to take the Bengals laying the 3.5 at home. Gee.
All right, my first game is going to be San Francisco minus 7.5 against the Rams. I think the Rams played over their head last week. I think San Francisco blows them out. I could see this being 15-20. I don't think the Rams are in this at all. My second pick, is it going to be the same principle? I'm taking the Giants minus the 5.5 against Arizona. again, another team. They played so-so. Washington wound up beating them, but I don't think they're good at all. I can't see the Giants not winning this by a touchdown. I'm taking the Giants -5.5. And my third pick is going to be the Thursday night game. I think Philly's coming out all guns a-blazing this time. 7.5 against the Vikings. I got the Eagles -7.5. I think this is a 10-point game. Those are my three picks for week 2 of the NFL season. Darren?
Well, I mean, that sums us up, guys. So we have made our predictions and our picks. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful and magical world of sports and Aaron Rodgers. 4 plays. That's right. 4 plays is all we got out of that. You can catch our podcast anywhere. You can download any podcast, whether it be Spotify, an Apple product, TuneIn. We're everywhere. But we're also posting a lot on Facebook and stuff like that. So you see us on social media, respond back, share, like. Do whatever it is that you can do to let more people know about the show. Tell us what you want to hear about. Tell us when to shut the hell up. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.